welcome to the final installment of 10 Days of Oscars here on The Cinephiles. I am one half of The Cinephiles, the outlaw John Roark, joined as always by my other half, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. I actually had an infant's mind transferred into my body. And so we're, you know, things are all kind of new for me right now, but I'm really excited about some of the experiences I'm going to have in this new life.
Oh, please stop playing with yourself on camera. Stop it.
It's below the frame.
That's true. It is. We are getting it as if Steve hasn't already let you know what we're talking about. Our final installment is Poor Things, brought to you by director Yorgos Lanthimos and written by Tony McNamara, based on the 1992 novel by Alasdair Gray. And this one stars Oscar winner for this performance, Emma Stone, Mark Ruffalo, Willem Dafoe, Rami Youssef, Christopher Abbott, and Jared Carmichael. And Steve, I got to tell you, this is a film that I resisted watching up until the last possible moment before I did my voting last year on the HGA Awards. And I recently rewatched it again for this podcast. And I have to tell you, I thoroughly, thoroughly love this movie. I was absolutely blown away by it. And I am a Yorgos Lanthimos person, although Killing of a Sacred Deer kind of in and out on, but I loved The Lobster. I loved The Favorite. And so seeing Emma Stone back under the direction of Yorgos Lanthimos, I thought these two are like the Scorsese and De Niro of these type of movies. And she was excellent and he was excellent. The production design, the cinematography, the music, the story, the visuals, the costumes, the progression of the story. And as I said, the performance of Emma Stone from where she starts off to where she ends up. I think this is a fascinating movie that holds up to multiple rewatches. What are your thoughts on Poor Things?
So the first thing I should say, I had never seen a Yorgos Lanthimos film before this. I mean, as I've said, in the last decade, you know, with my, you know, with my kid and stuff like that, I just didn't watch as many movies. So I had not, I still haven't seen The Favorite. I haven't seen The Lobster. I'm now going to watch them. Yeah. I had such a weird experience watching this film. I went to the theater. I knew kind of what it was, vaguely. Like, I knew sort of the idea. I was so fucking uncomfortable for the first 30 or 40 minutes. And it's not just that I find sex uncomfortable. It wasn't that. It was just the whole world. I was like, what the fuck is this? I don't know. How am I supposed to feel? How am I supposed to feel about Willem Dafoe? What is happening? You know, like there's weird creatures walking around and like he's, you know, has these weird bubbles coming out of his mouth and like all these things. I was like, what the fuck? And I just felt really stressed out. And then there's a certain moment in the movie where I went, oh, it's funny. And as soon as my brain allowed me to laugh, and not that it isn't very, very serious at various moments, totally is, but as soon as my brain went, oh, I can laugh, then I loved the film. Yeah. I really did. It took me a while. I actually do want to watch it a second time because I think I'll have a very different experience.
Yes.
Now that I kind of understand what I'm dealing with, I think it is a brilliant, profound, very funny, very moving film with a lot to say. And it's, again, you know, we've said this now throughout all these 10 days of Oscars.
Yeah,
man, these are interesting films. It's not like they're a bunch of like, here are just serious dramas. No, I mean, Poor Things to Past Lives to Anatomy of a Fall to Oppenheimer to Barbie. I mean, these are all visionary movies, holdovers, American Fiction, that telling unique, interesting stories. And it makes me really excited about the world of cinema right now.
Yeah, David Rooney, The Hollywood Reporter, said that this was a genre-defying film, and I think he was absolutely correct. You saw sex comedy being an element of this. You saw gothic comedy being an element of this, black comedy, absurdist comedy, and some steampunk elements all mixed into this movie. And it, for me, it all completely worked. And I have to say, I'm supremely surprised that our friend Shannon McClung walked out of this movie within half an hour. And maybe because, like you, he might have thought, wait, this is, what the hell is all of this? What am I doing with this? I'm getting out of here. But you powered through it because, you know, we had to discuss it for the show. But like, I find that to be fair because there's so many steampunk moments that I'm just surprised that if he had stuck it out, I think he might have turned the corner on the film and enjoyed it as much as you did. But yes, I agree with you. The comedic elements of the movie are what keep you kind of marveling and enjoying the film. But it also has this, obviously, this very serious undercurrent of a woman who is constantly being controlled by older males in her life, finding her own way, finding her own voice, finding her steel, being comfortable in her sexuality, owning her intelligence, owning her decisions and, you know, exploring the world and coming out the other side. And other people watching this could judge her for all her decisions, but she is singularly consumed with bettering herself as a person. And there's a great moment of defiance at the end there with what she does to the colonel or whatever rank he has. And I think that's a great moment. It all leads to this one person who is absolutely the worst parts of men. And she gets her revenge, stands her ground, figures out what's going on, fights back, and turns the tables on him. And then she is in control of the house. She left a baby and comes back the essentially the alpha of the house. And I think it's a great, fascinating arc amidst all this other comedic moments that makes me marvel and enjoy and appreciate Emma Stone's performance and absolutely agree that she deserved the Best Actress Oscar.
There's no question in my mind she deserved this Oscar. And it's not, look, Lily Gladstone, incredible. Sandra Hüller, incredible. There's a lot of incredible performances. And in a different year, those people are totally worthy of winning an Oscar. But nobody does. You know, we talk about, you know, whatever, you know, we just did Raging Bull on the Cinephiles. Yeah. And you talk about that as a performance for the ages because of all the things, all the vulnerability, all the range of emotions, the humanity, the physical things that Robert De Niro had to do. This is that kind of a performance. Yeah. I mean, physically, emotionally, sexually, obviously, in terms of her body and being exposed in that way and going through all this stuff and huge, massive journey of a character. And it's funny, I would say things a little differently, which is I would say, this is definitely a movie about a whole bunch of men trying to control her.
Yeah.
I don't think she's ever really controlled because she's not really controllable. And when she's, you know, has the mind of an infant, she's not really controllable because she has the mind of an infant in an adult woman's body. But then later on, Mark Ruffalo never really is able to control her. No one is able to control her. And I really believe this might be the most feminist movie I've ever seen in terms of the way it's structured and in terms of its willingness to explore female sexuality, to explore the fact that her opinions are valid, her way of looking at the world is valid, her control of her body is valid, and that she is, in the end, the master of her world.
Yeah.
That it is she who has to make the decisions of exactly who she wants to be, and she chooses to be exactly that. It's really powerful.
Yeah, I want to bring this up because friend of the show and personal friend of ours, Scott Mance, didn't agree with us. He thinks that it is, quote, a seriously misguided take on female empowerment, although he did praise the film's ambition and production value. And he was echoing what Mick LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle felt about the film. He said it was a 141-minute mistake. Worst of all, it's dishonest. It purports to be a feminist document, but it defines a woman's autonomy as the ability to be exploited and not care. What version of feminism are these guys, Lanthimos and screenwriter Tony McNamara, trying to sell us here? But I would have to disagree with both of those gentlemen, who I thoroughly respect in their opinions and analysis, because I do agree with you, Steve. I think this is a absolutely powerful feminist film here, because this is a woman who, yes, you could say she's being exploited, but she's always, as you said, uncontrollable. She's doing what she wants to do in every single second that she is on the screen. She will eat her food and spit it out as she sees fit. She will play with herself at the table. She'll show you that she's playing. She'll stick a cucumber up there if she wants. She discovers sex and she fucks to her heart's content when she wants to go and work in a brothel in order to make money. To her, she doesn't have the puritanical hangups that our society, our American society and other societies put on women about this kind of thing. She feels a strength in it because it's her decision, and even says to the brothel owner, who is, I can't remember the actress's name. She's fantastic. Seen her in a number of things recently, but says to her, you know, wouldn't it be better if we got to choose? Wouldn't it be better if we got, wouldn't everybody enjoy it more if we chose the men who would come in, or like when they came in, we would choose if we want to fuck them or not. So I loved that there was a lot of strength throughout this. And you're right with Ruffalo. Ruffalo's character steals her away because she wants to go on this journey. She wants to experience the world. She doesn't want to be held down and married and locked up in this house. She wants to go. Willem Dafoe lets her go. He doesn't come after her and try to nail her down or whatever. He lets her go. She goes and experiences the world on her terms, at her pace, in her way. Yes, it drives Ruffalo crazy, and he does get the better of her in a couple of moments, but this is the guy who ends up in a fucking loony bin because he cannot handle, for lack of a better term, because he cannot handle her empowerment, her strength, her individuality, her independence, and her ability to dictate her life, and consistently educating herself by reading all these philosophers and what have you. So I found this to be an incredibly strong female empowerment movie. We don't have to agree on this to Scott Manson, Mick LaSalle, but I would say that I agree with Steve that this is very much a female empowerment movie as I was watching it. And I was so impressed with the pacing of this and where it went and how the performances came about throughout and how she affected every man that she was with, including getting the best of that guy at the end in her own way and putting the brain of a goat inside of him to get the best of a man who was going to be physically and cruelly abusive to her.
Did you think by the end that Willem Dafoe's brain was going to go in him?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I was so certain that when they were, I was going like, oh, Willem Dafoe is dying. They're going to put his brain in this young guy and give him new life.
Punishment? That's no punishment.
Well, the other guy's, his brain is gone.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah.
His brain is gone either way.
true.
Yeah. I don't care what happens to the guy's body. I think what this movie is doing, which is the kind of thing that I love, it is deconstructing, in particular, in this case, Victorian values, but just our values in general. It's like, should a woman not enjoy having sex? Why? Yeah. You know, it's like that, like, well, she likes that. This is what she's in. It's like, why is prostitution wrong? If people are willing and everything is consensual, well, why do we have a problem with this? Like, these are the things over and over again where I think the movie questions it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have a problem with prostitution. Yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah,
but what I like is that the movie is examining these ideas. And man, Mark Ruffalo, it's like, his performance, and it's really when he came in, and it's sort of like, as I said, because at first I was like, oh no, here's this abusive person, here's this innocent girl, essentially, and here's this abusive person that's going to take advantage of her, which is what, you know, Nicholas LaSalle and Scott Mance, maybe that's what they're reacting to. Yeah. And that's certainly what starts to happen. But in the end, she's so powerful and so free that she destroys him.
Right.
And just watching him going from the most confident ladies man in the world, I've done this before, I know exactly what I'm doing, I'm controlling every element of this, to you're not in any control at all. And step by step she takes him apart, and just watching his descent into complete, like, total ineffectualism and then finally insanity is just hilarious. And again, this is where, like, I started to go, I can laugh at this is funny. And I also think like there's a moment of discovery, I think, where Willem Dafoe realizes that maybe his dad wasn't such a good guy, you know? And I think what's interesting about this movie is that it takes these horrible things, because to be real clear, Willem Dafoe, this is, you know, his just messing with nature is really horrible and fucked up. Yeah. But it's also just kind of examining it and going, well, this is what happened to me. This is life. This is what it is. And I think he has to learn lessons about who Bella is as he lets her go, and as he has this other woman that he's trying to do the same thing. It's like, you can't recreate Bella is Bella. You know, and I just think the strength that it is, and again, this is why she deserved the Oscar, is the step-by-step growth in each scene, just a little bit different, a little stronger, a little better understanding the world, a little clearer about who she is and what she wants. Is just, it's a magnificent journey that her character goes on.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. And again, the Willem Dafoe performance and the Mark Ruffalo performance are, look, Rami Youssef was certainly good, but I mean, the showier performances are Ruffalo and Dafoe. I mean, and I agree with you, like, his moments of comedy where it's always punctuated by something his father did to his body. In these exchanges, I think, what is that moment when he, like, starts to discover that he's having his issues, he's getting sicker, and he says, well, something about my father burning my genitalia or something like that. Like, I was just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, he refuses to accept that his father was a sadistic person.
Horrible.
He sees it through the prism of science, and that his father was exploring things, and he almost has accepted, like, My father used me in this way in order for him to advance his theories and his ideas. And look, I became a doctor anyway. So in the long run, it worked out for me. It's a fascinating thing. But he's very caring of Bella, right? And initially, you know, everyone else has to kind of move around. He does try to marry her off, certainly in some infantile approach to relationships, but she walks her own path and goes her own way. And Ruffalo is the second best performance of the movie, though. You're absolutely right. I mean, just his reaction to everything initially, and I think that's what's great about the movie also, to go on a little bit of a tangent, it takes down the right men that it's supposed to. It's not an anti-men movie. It takes down the right men, right? The men who would seek to control women, the Ruffalo's character and Christopher Abbott, that's who plays Alfie, those are the characters that get the comeuppance, right? Ruffalo spins out because those are those men you meet who are constantly talking about their sexual prowess. There's not much else underneath. And certainly that gets exposed there. He falls prey to alcohol, falls prey to greed and money, and then ends up in a psych ward, and then ends up turning on her by turning her into Alfie. And Alfie comes in, and he's a horrible person, clearly cruel to the servants, cruel to other people. This is why she wanted to kill herself and didn't want to have his baby, for God's sakes. And the way she pays him back is to put a goat's brain in him, and that's punishment. So I'm all for everything that happens to all the terrible men in the movie. Rami Youssef, who understands her, the character, what's the character he plays? Sorry about this. Max McCandless. Yeah. He is loving of her. He's caring of her. He's accepting of her. He knows she's an independent spirit, and he's okay with that because he knows that she loves him and he loves her. And so there is a coming together. And I love the scene at the end when she's having the conversation with Willem Dafoe, where she says to him, I don't like what you did to me. I don't like the way this all came about. And I'm not happy with how you did it. But I also can't deny all these incredible things that I experienced and explored and grew from. And that's a way of coming to terms, as we almost come to terms with how our parents have raised us or our creators have raised us. We've got to come to terms with these things, or we carry that around with us and can affect our lives and our relationships for the rest of our lives. So I found some really fun and interesting moments of closure in the movie. And I appreciate it, as I said, the punishment to the men who deserve to be punished in this film.
So I would like to put the objectification idea or the controlling idea on its head, because as you were speaking, I suddenly went to me, who is the person most treated like an object in this film? And that person is Willem Dafoe by his father.
Oh yes.
His father literally treated him as an object.
Yes.
Didn't care for him at all. Cut him up into all sorts of tiny little pieces to satisfy whatever his needs are. And then Willem Dafoe becomes a person who thinks he can treat everything in the world like an object. Everything is a potential science experiment. I don't really care about anything. And then Rami Youssef's character comes in and buys into that. And he's like attracted to Emma Stone or to Bella and wants to treat her as an object. So he signs a marriage agreement without any of her free will. So they're trying to apply this objectification or treating someone as an object to Bella, and it fails. And that Bella comes back and teaches both of them that she is not an object and that they cannot. And she totally changes their way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
You know, and because she refuses to accept that, which Willem Dafoe does accept, he's the way his father treated him. Yeah. He doesn't go like, hey, this really wasn't cool for you to burn my testicles in front of me. Not cool to take out my pancreas or make me so that I can't eat and I can't do all these things. That wasn't scar up all my whole face. That wasn't cool. And in the end, it's like, oh, we've moved to a new place. I really think, and it is funny, it's like just the idea of I get to control what I do with my life.
Yes.
And you can't control me. That is the message of the movie. And the fact that she comes up against the most controlling, the most evil, and the most scary person who doesn't believe. It's funny. We just talked about Zone of Interest. Yeah. I don't think these movies are similar in any way, but the thing that I said very strongly is that as soon as you dehumanize someone, you give yourself permission to treat them as not a human. And everyone's trying to do that with Bella, and it cannot be done. And the reason it can't be done, I'm reminded of, there's a quote from Gandhi, which is, in order for someone to ride on your back, you must first bend over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bella never bends over.
Nope.
Well, maybe in the brothel. But sorry, poor joke.
But it's her choice. Yeah.
But it is her choice.
Before we leave this conversation, I want to make sure I highlight the people involved behind the scenes. I thought the music from Yerskine Fendrix was fantastic to fit the designs and the scope of this and the construction of this world. Robbie Ryan's cinematography, I thought, was incredible here. He said he was influenced by Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula movie. That's what influenced him to create some of the visuals we saw. And I can absolutely see that now, looking back on the movie as well. The production design here by Shona Heath and James Price, and the art direction by Jonathan Holding and Getza Kurdi, who was the lead art director, I thought was stunning. And the costume design from Holly Waddington, also stunning. The set direction from Zuza Mihalik. I mean, the film is utterly stunning, Steve. And I was surprised that so many people thought that Barbie might win a lot of these technical awards that Poor Things took. Because, I mean, Poor Things is a visual spectacle when you're watching the movie. And I didn't say I didn't feel that in Barbie, but I certainly felt that much more watching Poor Things than I did with Barbie.
I think the production design is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I really like Barbie. I absolutely respect it. And I think they nailed it in terms of the look of that film.
Sure,
but it's not as inventive as Poor Things.
Right.
Because what Barbie did was it took a world that we're very familiar with in terms of, here's the toy world of Barbie. It's pink. Right. This is what Barbie's house looks like. And we can go like, they nailed it. You did such a great job of nailing this thing that was in my head and that I've seen through years and years of toys. Poor Things created a thing I had never seen before in my entire life, could never have predicted and never would have come up with. It looks, I mean, when they're out on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It just looks amazing. What an amazing looking film.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And those little vignettes in between each of the sequences where she's like riding a fish or jumping in between. I immediately thought to myself, I would love to, if I was a studio head, I would find a way to get Yorgos to do a TV show, a series, to bring that visual approach to a TV series. I think would make it one of the most outstanding. And I mean outstanding in terms of standing out from other types of shows that we've seen on streaming services or on TV. And I would love to if Yorgos ever does a TV show, and I don't know if he has in the past, but if he ever does one now that he's come so far as a director, I would be absolutely front and center on opening night for those episodes. Cause this is a guy who I've just marveled at. And when you watch his other films still, Steve, I'm going to be real curious to have a conversation, maybe a short, where we talk about his direction and what you thought of those movies. Could be a lot of fun. All right. Any final words here as we wrap up our discussion on Poor Things, Steve?
Well, I guess more final words on just our 10 days of Oscars, which is, I just want to celebrate that these are movies unlike any other movies. You know, Hollywood is so much about the same but different. I'm going to create another one of those, you know. And none of these films really, for the whole, all 10 of the Oscar movies, can I go like, oh, this is another one of those. Maybe The Holdovers is certainly a reference to a certain kind of 70s kind of coming of age character film. That's true. Oppenheimer is a big epic, but they're their own movies. They're really their own movies. And I just go like, I'm totally happy to have another Star Wars film. I totally hope that James Gunn and DC managed to put out a great Superman movie. I hope Marvel finds its feet again and makes good Marvel movies. But what I really hope is that Hollywood looks and goes, hey, here were some movies at various budgets and they made money and people wanted to see them and got excited, because the fact is I learn things and I grow as a human when I watch art that challenges me like this slate of movies did. And I really, really appreciate that.
I don't think I could add anything more to that, except that I 100% agree with you, man. And it's been a blast to have conversations with you about these. We didn't pre-prepare much and just felt that we would have fun conversations discussing these films and letting our discussions go where they went. And the fact that we're able to fill up 30 minutes in just about every one of these discussions, or almost 30 minutes in one of these discussions, speaks to the quality of these movies, and still feel like there was more to discuss by the time we had to wrap up, speaks to the qualities of this movie, these movies of 2023. And I think a lot of people are going to look back on this year as one of the best years of movies in quite some time. And I can't wait till we're doing all of these movies in 10 years on The Cinephiles. It'll be a lot of fun. All right, well, there you go. Thank you all so much for joining us for every installment of the 10 Days of Oscars. It's been a blast for Steve and I to do it. And we appreciate you all hanging out with us. And of course, we appreciate you all being viewers and listeners of The Cinephiles. And speaking of which, Steve, where can people go to find our podcast and everything we got going on?
Well, after they've hit both the like and subscribe button on this video, then they're going to go to their podcast system, whether that's Apple or Spotify or Stitcher or Overcast or whatever, and subscribe there. And while they're there, I think everyone probably would like to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if they happen to be Apple people and they want to get ad-free versions of the show and listen to our Cinephile shorts, maybe they would subscribe to the bonus feed there or go to patreon.com/thecinephiles where they can get those same features, or at other tiers they can access our watch-alongs, they can ask specific questions that we use in our regular episodes, or even join the Cinephiles advisory board where they can help plot the course of the Cinephiles. And when they're done with all that and they go, I would like to own every one of these movies, they're going to go to cinephiles.net where they could buy or stream every film we've ever reviewed. And finally, the last thing I guess they do is go to SR Morris on Twitter or SR Morris 1 on Instagram and follow me there. And maybe they'll do some other things with At The Roca Says. What do you think?
Yeah, please come follow me there, At The Roca Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and The Outlaw Nation on Twitch, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRocaSays. All right, it's been a blast. Steve, it's been awesome. We're getting out of here. Thank you all so much for joining us. And of course, next year we'll be back and we'll probably try to knock these out before the Oscars comes out.
That's the plan.
It just happened our schedule worked out this way for this year, unfortunately. But we hope you've enjoyed the discussions, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode or brand new live show here on the Cinephiles YouTube channel. Take care. Until then. Mm-hmm.